That's the one that is always in line with your news channel when they show the time. It's exact. So I'm going to concentrate on this one. Yeah, four. It was four. It was not five. It was four. I checked. My apologies. It was 4 minutes earlier. Minister, it's your turn now.
Thank you, Chair. I'll go through a number of questions and then leave the rest to DG and where he's asked to respond directly, and issues around the Richtersveld, I mean the parts of where we are, department or the ministry is asked for, we'll then, I'll respond, but otherwise I'll hand that over to the board chairs. I wouldn't like them to be here and not participate, because that will be wasteful and unnecessary, actually.
Yes, certainly.
So I want to do it in that way, Chair. But I'd like to start where you ended off, actually, Chair. And it's the issue of attendance of state-owned companies. State-owned companies report directly to Parliament. And if Parliament calls state-owned companies, then they should be coming to you. And there's no excuse for it. The department just needs to push them along. But they have to be in attendance irrespective. The issue around the previous CE was actually a stress factor, and I maybe just deal with SA Express collectively. I think the Honourable Murray asked me whether SA Express is a going concern now, and there are a whole number of people who raised that the DG said that SA Express look, SA Express is actually in a huge crisis. The DG said that since we have appointed an acting CEO from our own department, seconded somebody to go there, it is strengthening. The issue about this state-owned company called SA Express, Chair, is that we have to work towards the optimal airline industry. Everywhere in the world, it's probably the one industry that is not viable unless it is highly subsidized by its country, if it's a country airline. Now, I'm not saying SA Express has to be highly subsidized, but we've got to get SA Express, and you saw the first or the second slide where it actually shows that we agreed with the previous CE and the previous CFO that we will separate, because they were just not holding the company together. There are high leases, and I know somebody else has asked that question. They lease aircraft because we actually should be purchasing 50-seater aircraft. But they don't have the money to do so. I mean, I will allow Matsi to talk to the issues, but that's the sort of high-level issue. The other issue is that we've got to get, and it's a discussion that we're having with National Treasury. National Treasury convenes this committee where the optimal structure has to look at what happens with SAA, SA Express and Mango, and our 2.5% in SAA Link. And that has to be brought together. Now, there is a discussion. Baines has given us the proposal. All we need to do now is that National Treasury convenes us and we come together and decide what we do with SA Express, what we do with Mango, and how we put this optimal structure for the airline together. That's part of the reason, and I know it was a question as well. I am not too worried at this stage about the urgency of appointing the executive. Because what if we say that SA Express mustn't continue to exist, that it must be folded into SAA? Then we only need one CE. We only need one CFO for the operation. So at this stage, I think we're in a, the acting CE can present some additional issues and more operational issues. Talking to her on the telephone, she seems to be getting on top of the issues on how we need to deal with SA Express. So the issue about, we had somebody that we brought in from Denal Aviation to after the CE and SA Express decided to part ways. We then seconded someone from Denal CE, and that was the CE that you said was appointed in 2016 and left in 2017 chair. And I think it was just too stressful, actually. And he's gone back to his old job. So he's resigned from being in SA Express, and it's on those grounds that we had to get an immediate intervention, and we sent Ms. Mogolo. The marketing for every stock, I think I take that point. Both Dr. Luyenge and yourself have made the point. I take that point. Alex Score actually is only as important to the surrounding community. Safgal is probably the most important to the Safgal, to the Mpumalanga community. But I take the point. I think it's very, very important. Risk management is actually a separate body within the state-owned companies. It's a separate committee. It's the Audit and Risk Committee. And in fact, what we have been discussing, that audit and risk should actually be separate, and it is a statutory committee. It's the only other statutory committee other than People and Governance Committee. So, but you've seen, Chair, that we're talking about how we want to mitigate it at the shareholder. We almost have to also relook our own position, because we've acted in the way that every other GPE 5-year period has acted. But it seems that we've got to up our game in terms, what seems it is, so to deal with risk management. And in fact, if you look at the slide 24, I think it's in your additional set of slides. That's actually the shareholder oversight and the direct response powers and responsibility in the soft governance framework. And there, between the shareholder representative, executive authority, and the board, is almost a fixed line where the board really should be able to pick up the risks before anyone else pick up those risks and be able to report those risks to the shareholder. The shareholder, in the same way, if they pick up any risk just in the intel, should be able to immediately go to the board and ask the board to deal with it. The board immediately goes down to the management to try and get the issues resolved in that way. Now, just dealing with the supply chain processes, but I mean, DG can also respond a little bit more about the structure that we have put in place around risk management. The supply chain processes, this links up with the fact that in the two financial years, the procurement and contract management has been identified as key risks within the state-owned companies. And this comes to the point that Honourable Member Swartz raised, and raised with me outside of this venue around the SIU. Now, at the time, I immediately went to apply and put in an application to have an SIU investigation into procurement and contract management in both ESCOM and Transnet. And yeah, I also deal with somebody else's question who asked, are the taps open in Transnet? I've written to the president because we are now awaiting sign-off on the SIU. So it's gone in about 3 months ago already. And we were then told it was at Justice. Then we were told it's at the Presidency. Now we're told it is at the Presidency. It is waiting for sign-off from the President. And that would then be the SIU processes. And I'm hoping that it will do more. It will, because it leads to prosecution and criminal processes, prosecution on criminal processes, it will also throw up what are the general kind of supply chain issues or procurement issues within the state-owned companies. These are huge, especially Transnet and ESCOM, not excluding the others. They are huge companies. In fact, the first meeting with the chair of ESCOM, I recommended to him that we should relook the decentralization of procurement within ESCOM, for example, and centralize procurement so that we have better control over the procurement within ESCOM. Of course, this excludes the procurement of coal, Chair, in answer to your question. It excludes the issue of coal. But in the significance materiality framework, we have included coal for this year to the tune of 1.5 billion rand, so that anything over 1.5 billion rand must come as a PFMA application to the department. There was also quite a number of questions around the Presidential Review Committee. Remember, out of the Presidential Review Committee came the IMC led by the Deputy President of the country. And out of that came a number of areas that we've been working on. The one was the appointment of boards, and that is led by the Department of Public Service and Administration. And that has gone to Cabinet twice already. And it comes to Cabinet for discussion, it comes to Cabinet for debate, it comes to Cabinet for a number of issues, and then it goes back so that that it can be strengthened with the kinds of issues that came out of Cabinet. We've also have the remuneration of, I spoke to that earlier, the REM standards. Now, the REM standards already, Honourable Member Tsedi, I think you also asked, we are ready to launch it, actually. They're ready to go out into the public. And that also came out of the Presidential Review Committee. Then the third issue is the appointment of boards already. The Shareholder Management Bill has served before Cabinet three times already. And it served before Cabinet, and what has to happen is that it serves and it goes back for more comments from members. And what we, and then we serve, it serves again, it serves at most lechotla of cabinet, and it comes back again. Because, so this year, it's gone through its a number of processes within the governance structures. This year, I'm absolutely convinced we're going to be able to get the shareholder bill. Ursula just told me now that one of the issues that we still need to deal with is the socio-economic impact study on the shareholder management bill, and that's a new area that comes from the Department of Monitoring and DPM, the Department of Planning and Monitoring. So I know I've said before that the shareholder management bill, it's quite a revolutionary bill, I have to tell you, because it does change the structure of how state-owned companies or where state-owned companies sit. So it could actually change departments as a whole. So it could mean that, for example, you have an aviation complex or you have a transport complex, and aviation sits with transport. And so instead of SAA and SA Express and all of them sitting in DPE and in finance, it could all be sitting in the Department of Transport. It could mean that all the energy in the energy complex, all the energy state-owned companies would be sitting together, like CEF and ESCOM and so forth. It also has a role for the regulatory bodies within. I'm just giving sort of a heads up on it. So, and that's why it's taken so long, because it means that it will change the way government looks, where state-owned companies are, where state-owned companies are, members of the executives are shareholders in state-owned companies. So, for example, Department of Transport and PRASA, my department and the six state-owned companies in my department, Minister of Finance with SAA and other state-owned companies in his department. So it could change fundamentally. I'm waiting the Competition Commission's report on the excessive pricing. Transnet maintains that they're not excessively priced. It's not excessive pricing, but we are awaiting the outcome of the Competition Commission. DG can also deal with a consequent management in terms of from the shareholder, because that's part of the risk profile that we've dealt with. I actually don't understand why you don't have the capital expenditure report on Saldanha, but I'm told on the Boomeray that it will, Lebogang will give it to you. I'm going to ask, I believe in Alex School, we've met many times, the Rural Development and Land Reform Department and ourselves. We've met a number of times. Apparently, our senior counsel has asked for a number of questions. Look, in the first instance, in terms of the deed of sale, the people who should be allocating the 45 million plus interest. I mean, I can't tell the honourable member who asked the question who will get the interest and how that works. But I'm assuming that interest, and of course it is in the bank, it can never be, if there's money lying in any kist somewhere, it must be some serious violation. It's the 45 million plus interest is in the bank. In terms of the deed of sale, when it happened, the DPE is responsible for Alex Gore, the company, and the community part of it, the community involvement, the ownership of land, all of that rests with rural development, which means that the payment paying out also rests with rural development. We've taken a decision in the department that we will look at our senior council on the matter to try and pay out that money, because it's 3,000 families who would get about 15,000 rand in a very poor area. So it's, but again, Alex Gore could continue, we can do a follow-up. I am told by Alex Gore that we're ready, and the community of Richtersveld and the municipality of Richtersveld is ready to actually receive the town of Alex Gore. Because remember, we've, as Alex Gore has actually fixed up the whole town, and sewerage has been laid and all of that. Now the municipality is ready to have that town as part of its municipality. And but I'm going to hand over to Alex Gore to deal with that issue as well. When we know that there's a risk to the fiscus, for example, with a liquidity issue around Eskom, for about 3 months, when we discovered the issue of liquidity in relation to Eskom, we started dealing with the matter between ourselves, National Treasury, and Eskom, and looked at all sorts of ways of trying to deal with Eskom's liquidity issue. That included issues like the RCA, like Eskom finding better ways to do cost savings, and so forth. We have committees made up of ourselves and National Treasury that actually try to mitigate the risk to the fiscus. And I think that's probably why none of the state-owned companies have defaulted yet, in because we try to mitigate the risk to the fiscus. But there are a number of reasons. It's not a question asked, but there are a number of reasons why Eskom was at this liquidity point that it's gotten to now. But I'm sure as well that when you meet with Eskom on Thursday, you'll deal with the issue in a lot more detail. The issue of localization is actually a headache, because the state-owned companies will give you figures that says that 83% of everything that we do in this area has a large localization element. Or the reason why we can't localize in this area is because we can't buy valves, because it only comes from its OEM. You've heard those answers over and over. But we've got to try and... we actually have built it into, for this year, into the significant and material... We've upped the figures into the significant and materiality framework so that they actually deal directly and honestly with the issues of localization, that they show that there's no other way that they, in a short period of time, that they are not able to source from locals within the South African space.
Um,
I just want to answer. I'm very sorry, Honourable Member Dlamini, if you think I'm arrogant and I come late. And I've never come late for this committee. In fact, I came late today, 4 minutes earlier than the chairperson's time. But I really try not to come late, and I really do not want to be arrogant to the committee. So I'm very sorry that you think that my... You know, I'm over 50. I have to do some things that I can't not do. So I did
explain that.
So I have explained to the chair at the beginning of the session, but I'm not being arrogant. I submit myself to this committee whenever I can. The only reason I don't submit myself to the committee is when I have a cabinet meeting on a Wednesday. Has the new board been appointed? The new board will now go to the first cabinet, which is tomorrow morning, and I will take it through to that cabinet for appointment. I did not sanction the Molefe pension, and that came out in the court case as well. Look, internal and external auditors are appointed annually at the AGM for each one of the state-owned companies. And I think the point you are making is a good one, though. I don't know what assessment the state-owned companies use to assess whether or not the internal or external auditors but are good or not within their companies. What I am pleased with, though, is that all of these state-owned, these internal or external auditors, they are accountable to the Auditor General of the country. It's a Chapter 9 institution, and we have to deal with it. Okay, I'm going to, and I'll pick up.
Before the DG comes in, I would like to allow, after I've covered the one that you are coming in for, I would like to have chairpersons of board following the minister, and then later the DG. Thank you.
Chairperson.
It's coming back to answer some questions.
No. Just one second. I know the minister is answering and saying submitting the board tomorrow. I just wanted to know who appointed the board.
The board was, this is the way the board was appointed. The deputy president of the country, the minister of finance, and myself attended a meeting with the president of the country. And then we've been in a process, DPE, of engaging with various business organizations to get names for the board. Remember, after December, I said that the next phase would be the phase where we would bring in more business people onto the board of ESCOM, and I will engage with the business organization. And that's what we did. So we had that list of people whose names were taken largely the names came from the list. And then, of course, one or two names also came from those in government who were in the room. And then I have to, as the minister responsible for, or the shareholder representative, I then have to do all the other processes, which would be the verification of, we check their qualifications, their, whether they have criminal cases against them, and so forth. So there's a whole set of verifications that need to be tested. And I do all of that, and I then take it to cabinet. But that's the way the process is happening. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Minister. The board members, the chairpersons, please, if you don't mind, you can just, for my sake, repeat that which entity are you coming from. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Hansi Matsik. I'm from Alexco. I would just like to respond on the issues around the 45 million. The deed of settlement was made an order of court, and Alexco was to deliver on a number of issues. The two outstanding matters that still need to be handed to the community of the Rechtersveld is the 45 million linked to the property, because that money was mainly for maintenance of the properties that Alexco was going to be occupying for the next 10 years. The second one was the issue of the municipality. We have recently agreed with the municipality that we will hand over the municipality in the next year, because the municipality was saying they do not have the means to maintain the infrastructure currently. The 45 million is sitting with Weber Wendell in a trust. The community have requested Alexco to transfer the money directly into the beneficiaries, which is the 3,000 families. For us to do that, we need the court approval. So that's where the state law advisors have come in. We're still waiting on that process to take place. There's an issue around the interest. The ICC, which is your initial cost contribution, to the value of 200 million, which was advanced to the PSJV, pooling and sharing joint venture, is an interest-free loan. So we are still to determine with the PSJV, or depending on the performance of the PSJV, we are still to determine how much would be repaid to Alexco, because that's the money that needs to be repaid to Alexco. So meaning the PSJV will have to pay back the 49% of the Rechtersvelders into Alexco interest free. We are still to determine how much would be repaid. At the last board meeting, we agreed that at the time when we when the organization performs well, we will decide to maybe repay 10% of the profits. But we unfortunately were faced with a situation where one of our big contractors, who is mining the deep sea, had issues with their boats, and they were offshore for long. They have assured that they will only be coming back to site sometime in April. So based on that, our revenue will in this financial year drop from the 800 million we made last year to about 500 million of this current financial year. So we will not be able to get to a point where we are confidently saying this is what will be paid to Alexco, but we are endeavoring to repay some of this cost contribution. The interest in the 45 million, just as much as the ICC is interest free, it is clear on the court order that only 45 million will be paid into the property holding. So the court order is clear that this money must go into the property holding. The reason why we never transferred the money into the property holding was because the property holding itself was not properly constituted. It only had one director, and that's when the community came in and said, we cannot allow for one person to manage the finances of the community. It is also worth noting that all the structures of the Rastafel community are not properly constituted. We've got the CPA that's still not, I'm not sure how to put it, but we are waiting on the AGM to take place, and we are relying on rural development for the process of the AGM to sit. And once CPA is elected, then we will have all other structures properly constituted. Currently, we had to approach the court as the Alex Go for court to make available to us independent board members to represent the community. So we've got three members that are sitting at the PSJV board level who are representing the community. And it was purely due to the fact that community themselves were, there were these infighting. The court order is applicable until October of this year or at the time when the AGM is executed. I will hand over to the CE to talk to the issue of the rehabilitation.
Thank you, Chair, for you. The rehabilitation is ongoing. We've appointed the contractor towards the end of last year, and the inland one, the delay there was caused by the fact that we, as Alesco and PSA, we decided to do it ourselves. But it is ongoing, and within 2 years should be done. Thanks.
Thank you. The next chair of the board.
Honorable Chair, members of this August House Minister, with your blessings, I'm going to ask the Group CE of DINEL and Group CFO of DINEL to quickly just provide the committee with answers. Thank you.
That order.
Again, Honorable Chair, Minister, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity for giving us to come and really account for what we are doing in DINEL. I have to say that, you know, DINEL is not an ordinary company, which we all know. DINEL is a company that sells sharp-end goods, and most of our sales are international. So whatever we do in this country, whatever appears in any manner in the papers, it becomes a problem for us internationally. So I would go briefly to the matters that are relating to what was being asked. The matter of the report is incorrect. It was not an incorrect report. There were issues that were not highlighted by the auditors, which now we have moved. But I do not want to preempt the tabling of the report on the 6th of February. But it suffices to say to me that at this point in time that we have had discussions with ourselves, with our executive authority, with the auditors, and I think we have moved very, very positively. The issues of the salaries of DINEL, you have to understand that DINEL's expenditure a month, it's more than 600 million per month. And that has to do with paying the banks on the loans that we owe. That has to do with paying the suppliers. That has to do with paying the salaries. So we have to prioritize in terms of how we pay these monies, because if we do not pay the banks as expected, then we are in default. That can trigger a lot of things, not only in Denel, but in the whole of government. So we make sure that we will never, ever, ever default. The second thing is that we have never, ever not paid salaries in Denel. What happened in this case was that because we have these greenfield discussions with the workers, we take all matters that affect the company whereby we believe the workers can be of help to say that we will be able to, we have these challenges, we will be able to do these things and these things this month. But what happened in December was the matter that we preempted and saying that we are having a slight challenge because we had to pay double the salary because there was a 13 check and other payments that were due. We have to pay the SARS, et cetera, et cetera. But then, of course, we have unionized members, and immediately it just went out of proportion. It went to the papers. But I'm glad and very happy to say that we paid all salaries. We do not owe anybody any salary at this point in time. Going forward, we are paying salaries. We did not have a problem in paying salaries in January. We will not have a problem in paying salaries in February, March, going forward. However, I need to caution that the expenditures of Denel are not small. They are huge. And the monies that we get in mostly come from our operations, and those are scheduled payments. So what happened in December created a bit of delay in terms of us being able to complete some of our projects on time. But we have plans, and we are almost catching up in terms of being able to make sure that we are able to pay all the salaries. And there's what we call in defense a hockey stick effect, whereby most of the work is done in January, February, March. And we do about between 30 to 40% of our work during that time. So we have no issue in terms of paying the salaries February, March, and going forward. But the issue of liquidity in Denel is a serious matter, and it's not a matter that started now. I've been there for a very long time, and it has always been a matter. In fact, Denel has never really, really, really made serious money. We have spent a lot of, we have made sales over 400 billion, and then we have the expenditures were slightly over 400 billion. So really you'll find that Denel has really never made serious money in the industry. But this is the type of, this is the industry whereby it is strategic to our security in the country. So it's not an industry whereby you will think that it's a buy and sell and make profit. So it's bigger than that. The picture is bigger than what we know in terms of operating as a company. The matter relating to the marketing and profiling, and it is true that we might, and we are not really exposed to the South African community at large for them to understand what Denel does and where is Denel going. However, we do have programs which are largely in the CSI space, you know, corporate social investment. I mean, we have produced matriculants with high standards. We have had over this year, I think we have had over 100 distinctions. And we are in about 7 of the 9 provinces whereby we're offering tutorship to the students, especially for high school and grade 11 and 12. And some of those students, they come back to Denel and they work for Denel and they have excellent results. So we're very, very proud of that. And the localization program, it is true that because of the nature where Denel got its programs before, some of the suppliers, in fact, most of the suppliers were overseas. We have a program, a strategic program, whereby we are changing that. We are trying to localize as much as possible. In fact, 50% of our production now is local. And then about 30% of that is the designated groups. So we are improving on that. We want to really, really improve on that. Denel needs and Denel must play a critical role in the industrialization of the Republic of South Africa, of our Republic, because of the cutting-edge skills that we have. And we are aware of our role. So we cannot diminish our role just to be in the defense sector only. We have to expand our role in other areas of the South African economy, whereby we'll be able to add value and be able to create other industries which can be sliced off from Denel and then they operate by themselves. This has been done in other countries. So this is one of our plans that we're going forward. So we do have a plan in saying that we would want to, and we are like to play a critical role in the industrialization of the Republic of South Africa. And we have developed few programs at this point in time, and we are implementing them. Chair, the issue related to risk management, it is a critical thing in defense, because if you do not manage your risks, it affects your products. If it affects your products, then your products have become inaccurate. And when they're inaccurate, you can never be able to sell your products. In fact, because these products are cutting edge, sharp-end products, it has to do with people's lives. So risk management, we have every month meetings with the DPE, our executive authority, to look in particular at programs and to look in particular at risks, whereby we will flag early and say we have a risk in this area. And I'm happy to say, as you would all know, that stability in the defense sector is very important. Our clients internationally were asking us, you need to be very stable in Denel. And we have proven to be stable in terms of our market. In fact, we are now securing new orders coming in. In fact, there are many other clients that are interested now in Denel, and they are coming back. I think the finances, some of the finances issue, I will leave it to our financial officer, chief financial officer, and then he will explain further about that. The issue relating to the SAX executive that was seconded there, he was seconded and he worked there for some time. And then, however, you must remember that he is an employee of Denel. And you also must remember that we are paying his salary. So we needed him to come and fulfill his work, his job where he's supposed to work. So I think then that is why the ministry then decided to get someone from the ministry itself. But he's very, very important for us. He's running programs, new programs, aviation programs that are coming. In fact, if we do our work well, we will be able to produce some new products that will be amazing going forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next chair of the board, Chairperson Notisad. CFO is still coming?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I hope you are not going to be long. We still have to give others time. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. And in this particular subject, you are raising my reputation precedes me. I will try very hard to be extremely short. In fact, my CE has specifically addressed most of the issues. I just want to say one or two things, particularly in the area of the contestation that Denel specifically is in a mess. And I'd like to give some context to what we are actually dealing with as a business. And I think one of those, the first one that I really would like to touch on is that our competitors worldwide, in our own analysis, which we are battling in the market space together, they sit with an environment where they do between 60% and 80% of their business in their local markets. In other words, their local defense forces are their primary and biggest buyer of the products that they make, which gives them a leverage to negotiate better terms that sustain themselves. We sit with a situation where only about 20 to 25% of the business that we do is in actual fact local business. So 75% of our business is international, which reduces our ability to leverage and get terms that are beneficial for the sustainability of this particular business. I think that's the first issue. The second issue is we are inheriting a business, as the CEO was saying, in our own analysis of the last 15 years, from 2001 to 2012, this business collected in excess of 46 billion rands, but the net cash that remained in the bank was a negative 4 billion rands. So in other words, throughout that period, the business never really made any cash. In the last 5 years, we collected about 23 billion rands. We had only made cash of 100 million rands in that entire period, out of 23 billion rands which we collected. So we are sitting with a business that's structured in that particular fashion, and what we are focusing on at this particular point in time is to create solutions to addressing the inability to create sufficient cash flows to sustain this this particular business. What then compounds our particular problem is the fact that in the last 5 years, this business has actually grown more than double of its capacity. 5 years ago, we had about 3.6 billion rands turnover level. Where we're sitting currently, we are in excess of 8 billion rands turnover. Now, all of this is happening with this constraint around cash generation within the business itself, which needs to be solved. So it is no surprise that this particular business is finding itself in some liquidity crunch, which we are working very hard towards resolving. Now, it is clear that a business that is faced with the challenges that we have ought to have some form of intervention from a shareholder. We are currently sitting with in excess of 19 billion rands worth of orders signed, which need to be executed. So this is a very healthy business in every fund you look at, except that it ought to be properly funded, and that's what we are working on. We are very happy to announce, as the CEO said, that in as far as the salaries are concerned, as far as our creditors are concerned, we had some relief in December, and we are taking care of those particular issues, but that doesn't give us a lasting solution to this particular problem, and we are engaged with the shareholder department, with National Treasury, looking at ourselves in our own balance sheet, identifying assets that we might look at in terms of creating some form of liquidity. And we are hopeful that in the imminent period ahead, we should be looking at a lasting solution to this particular matter. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. The other Chairperson of the Board.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Lungile Mabeka. There are two issues that I would like to...
What is your name?
From SAFCOP.
Thank you.
My apologies, Chairperson. Yes. Firstly, the question with regard to the update on IFLOMA. IFLOMA is in the process of being operationalized. In fact, as members would remember, the reports that used to come were to the effect that IFLOMA was under care and maintenance. And a decision was taken by the board to operationalize IFLOMA. And that process is ongoing, so much that in the last year, that's 2017, there's a lot of interaction that has taken place between South Africa, us, SAFCOL, as well as with EJAP, that is representing the shareholder of government in Mozambique. And the processes, not only the processes in terms of the actual operations, of which the operations now have also have become more active, increasing even the number of people who are getting employed. But also in terms of dealing with one of the challenges that apparently led to the asset being placed under care and maintenance, that is the cost of running that entity. And those issues are being addressed, because it turned out that one of the challenges was how the asset was structured or was designed to be in the first place. That the what has been referred to as Floma 1, which is the initial asset in Manica province, as well as the other one that we normally refer to as Ifloma to its Sofala province, were in fact actually meant to be two operations that are structured differently. So all those things are things that are being addressed. And in essence, Ifloma as a as an asset is beginning to take shape, and in fact is operational to the extent that there's a regional manager that is normally referred to in other companies as a country manager that has been appointed to actually drive that process in Mozambique, who, a person who is a Mozambican himself. So that is about Ifloma. And then the other question it relates to Safcor not being known by the public. Yes, I think that has been the case, Chairperson, to the extent that I was very concerned when immediately after our appointment as the current board, we attended a World Forestry Conference in Durban, hosted for the first time in South Africa, where every person who spoke on behalf of government of South Africa never mentioned Safcor. Mentioned SAPI, mentioned Mondi, but not Safcor, the entity that is supposed to be mentioned by government, but it was never mentioned by any. But I believe, Chairperson, that that situation has changed. At least in the past 12 months or so, there have been a drastic change, to the extent that, in fact, in the past, if you look between September last year and now January, there have been quite a lot of things that have happened. In practically on TV, on radio, in newspapers, there have been, including industry publications, there have been something about Safcor. Because amongst other things, we have been driving forestry industrialization, of which we held the Forestry Industrialization Conference on the 4th and 5th of October. That received a very broad coverage, including not only with your SABC TV coverage, including CNBC Africa, that went beyond just South Africa in terms of the coverage. In fact, the, I'm told the last coverage that has appeared was on the 26th of January with CNBC Africa Chairperson. So the processes, in fact, that's one point. But the other point has been, which has been a point of challenge in as far as Safcor is concerned, has been the branding part, which the board took a decision to address. Hence, you see the new branding with regard to Safcor, which branding is in the process of being rolled out to include, to deal with the subsidiaries that are also causing confusion. Because if you go to Mpumalanga, Limpopo or KZN, people in the community don't know Safcor. They know Kobateland Forest, which is and which has a totally different branding for that matter. So all those things are things that are being addressed to an extent that now there's a process of the community, the public getting to understand the Safcor as a group. You know, so much that there are invitations that have started to come even from communities in the Eastern Cape for career guidance and other things to show that, in fact, that there is movement towards getting Safcor to be recognized as a national entity that should be having presence or effect in the different areas of the country and beyond. Thank you, Chairperson.
Welcome. Thank you. Next chair of the board.
Chairman, my name is Trevor Abens, members of the committee, Minister. I'm standing in for our chairman, George Motema, and I'd just like to make some brief comments before just asking our CA to fill in with some details. I'm a bit alarmed to hear that we will mention another 10 in this committee. I was not aware of that, and I'm sure we will take it back and ensure that we do attend regularly where called. To the committee members, I'd just like to assure from the board's perspective in terms of governance, we have been acting very decisively on Malfians where there's performance issues. Sorry, sex. My apologies. We parted company, South African Express Airways. We parted company with the previous CEO. I'm not talking about the Danel secondment. Our CFO.
Order there.
As well as our previous commercial manager, and in the context of ongoing investigations, matters which we've handed over to the WARCS, we've also handed the matter over to SAPS on component issues. Unfortunately, we're not getting the kind of response we'd have liked, and I think we're looking to push that onto the WARCS as well. So we're quite clear from a board perspective that, you know, we will be, have been, taking action where we found problems with malfeasance in the company as well as performance-related matters. Aviation is a very dynamic industry. It's moving very fast and changing at a pace which you have to be able to respond. Aviation is about strategy. Yes, there's an operational side which we need to comply with, but at the end of the day, it's about strategy. And I think here's one of the constraints we face is that, as the Minister said, there's a broad strategic framework that government is moving towards an amalgamation of its assets, its aviation assets. Unfortunately, there's not much clarity yet. It leaves us in a space of uncertainty, and it's very difficult to retain some of the senior skilled personnel in that type of environment where we lack that kind of clarity and decisive action on that. I think it's really imperative that action does happen in that respect. There are issues also just around decision-making in an environment that we are faced where things change very rapidly and require the kind of responsiveness. Some of the mechanics of getting the necessary approvals, not just from one ministry, but multiple ministries, does in fact impact on our ability to compete effectively in the market. We are not able to operate against small, leaner private entities. We, for good reason in the PMFA, we go through certain hurdles that really do slow us down. From a board, we find it frustrating at times. Right now, we're busy discussing with Treasury, and I think we're coming to agreement around certain kind of protocols which we're able to, as a board, proceed, particularly around lease arrangements going forward. I think this is an airline which has historically been undercapitalized, and it's impacted when we came in 2015 in May on board the board that I'm speaking of now, already with substantial serious debt, which impacted on some client and service provider relationships where we were not able to procure. And its impact, of course, falls down on the kind of aircraft that we have available in the fleet at any time due to lack of the kind of spares that we require to do it. So recapitalization is a very, very critical impediment that we're confronted with right now. Just to give you an idea, and we are doing something about it. In December, we had 6 of our own aircraft, which was available for a fleet of a service about 14, and that's been costing us about $192 million a year just to lease in chartered aircraft around that. At the moment, we're 10 out of 14 and moving forward in terms of getting the fleet up to what we require. But the real trick and the real nub of the matter is the financials. And we've been doing quite a considerable amount of work with both Treasury, even Transnet's been assisting us in various respects. And right now, 2 of our banks are already on board with the restructuring of the kind of both debt protocols as well as the guarantees, state guarantees, that will allow us to actually plan a way out of there. I think with the new CE that's coming aboard, we have a much more stringent monitoring of our cost basis of our operation and trying to get us onto a level footing. But ultimately, the whole game changer is going to be the broader strategy as to how the state's airline assets looks in the future. And that we can only wait on at this time. I'd just like to give over to our CEO to make some additional comments around specific issues that might have been raised.
Thank you, Chair. I think you've covered most except two issues. Honorable Ranto and Mazone, they spoke about development of strategies from the LTTS, Vision 2020, Shrink to Grow, and we know this, as Minister mentioned, the Bain report, and also the CBS report that also looked at the relationship between SAA and SA Express and Mango. What we are doing currently, we are not looking at any new strategy. We are implementing those strategies, but all of them have a number of areas, and we've decided to face the implementation. The first phase, it looks at things that we can do to help ourselves. And as the Chair Sheikh indicated, our environment is the one that is forever evolving. So we've decided that we will adopt a strategy that looks at aircraft availability and aircraft reliability. And we look at those things, we monitor them on a daily basis. And I think that's the reason why we are able to improve from 6 to 10 within 4 weeks. But also with that, we wanted to improve our scheduled maintenance, because currently the reason why we're relying on charters is because we have a number of aircraft on the ground. We have a number of aircraft that are out of service. So we have introduced what we call the charter reduction plan. So on a daily basis, we say we want to fly our own metal, meaning we have to work hard in technical and ops to make sure that we get our own aircraft on air. Then as we do that, we reduce reliance on the charter. Charter reduction also comes with then the ability to improve on our on-time performance. I think one of the issues that we're taking a knock on is on customer satisfaction. We are also not able to increase pricing because we are not able to offer the customers reliability at all times. So if we improve on our on-time performance, we are able to satisfy the customers, and then we can then start looking at the prices. In terms of strengthening our balance sheet, we also realize that the current model that we use of operating leases is also putting us at the back foot. So we are engaging the shareholder department and National Treasury to look at financing lease, but also to ensure that we look at asset-based financing. And the two lenders that we're talking to, they are promising in terms of working with us in that regard. One thing that comes strong out of the SOC reform process, and that also Honorable Luyenge spoke to, is the issue of SOC to SOC collaboration. And I think our challenges currently gives us an opportunity to put that process into a test. So what we have done in terms of talking to the DNEL around the issues of the MRO, even Transnet, I think members are aware that Bombardier is currently producing 240 locomotives for Transnet, and we are also working with them in terms of the Q400. So we're looking at how can we leverage the Transnet buying power to make sure that we also benefit in terms of the parts exchange program. Not only are we talking to Bombardier around that, we're also talking to Lufthansa Technics, all the OEMs that are doing work with us, to see how we can leverage those relationships. So I think, as the Chair indicated, the airline has a history, but at the same time, it has committed employees, but we are not also able to retain most of them because we have a moratorium that was put to the company in 2014 of no salary increment. And in an environment that is evolving, we're losing pilots, we're losing technicians, we're losing engineers. So we needed to find a way of maintaining that skill within the company. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
Okay. Mark Chris McDonald on behalf of Transnet. I think there were just two points that we needed to respond to.
One was your position.
I'm the Group Executive of Business Services.
Okay.
One was regarding suspensions, just to assure the committee that any senior suspensions, we've got an independent service provider that will handle the disciplinary inquiry. And the findings of the inquiry are presented to a subcommittee of the board. At the moment, I think I'm aware of four people at a GM level and above that are currently on suspension, and those disciplinary inquiries are in progress. And in addition, if it involves fraud or any other criminal activity, the cases opened with the Hawks, so that has happened in those cases as well. The other question was relating to the capital expenditure at Saldanha Bay. I think the minister has already indicated that the department will be issuing the report. We'll obviously assist to make sure that that's as current as possible. Thanks, Chair.
You forgot to mention that your CEO has sent his GM to attend this meeting. She arrived when...
yes, Chair.
During the break.
After the introductions, I have three additional colleagues that came from Transnet, a GM from the CEO's office, internal audit executive.
Please, your hand, so that I can understand where you are.
And the deputy company secretary as well.
Introduce themselves.
Thank you, honourable members. My name is Cleopatra Shiqeka, the GM in the Group Chief Executive's office. We apologize for being late. SAA took off at 6:30 only. That's why we got here a bit late. Thank you.
Sithoko Zile Morupa from Internal Audit. Sithoko Zile Morupa from Internal Audit.
I am Bohleng Ndlovu, Deputy Group Company Secretary. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG. It's your turn now. You have, because I want to close the meeting at 1, you have 10 minutes because of your colleagues have covered most of the issues. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Indeed, they have covered a lot, so I'll only touch on the 3.
Oh, okay. All right.
So I'll touch only on the 3 issues. One issue is the part where Minister requested me to talk to the risk and the framework. And it's actually better I highlight that the meeting when we were presenting our annual report, the committee members asked us a difficult question. AG was part to say, how do we get a clean audit, and most of our SOCs don't get that. So out of that meeting, we went back, we met with the AG and worked out a mechanism on how best then do we improve going forward. And we have agreed that our own audit committee would expand the framework to include the participation of the state-owned companies and the participation of the AG also. And we are refining that mechanism to ensure that we have both the AG and ourselves, meaning our own audit committee. Because currently our audit committee is more focused on the department. So the idea now is to expand it to look into the audit committee reports of state-owned companies on a quarterly basis, so that then we have an overarching mechanism of ensuring that we don't just wait until the year end to look into the audit results and whatever the challenges that would come through there. And the second issue on consequence management is that our guiding framework lies on the Companies Act and the Memorandum of Incorporation, and supported, of course, by the same work of the audit, both internal audit and the external auditors. And on the part of performance, where performance target has not been met, we then ensure that the consequence management in terms of payments of incentives are activated. Because annually they have to, the board chairperson writes to the minister requesting minister's approval on the payments of bonuses and things like that. I think that's where performance targets have not been met, minister would decline. the payment of such incentives. And secondly, it uses also her right to rotate the board where the performance of the board is not adequate. And in terms of corruption and other things, maybe also an non-adherence to the PFMA and all those regulations, the law takes its course inside the company, of course, under the board in terms of disciplinary processes that are within the company itself. So that's the broader framework in terms of consequence management. And I think the third issue, I have really taken note of the issue of the BRRR report, that when we leave here, we go look into the contents of those things that we may have not responded to. And I think in terms of the capital, the information request on the capital program, Transnet has just now indicated that they will definitely furnish that information to the honorable member. I think those were the three things that I thought have not been responded to. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. I'm not stopping the information to be forwarded to a member that has a question, but I think the committee at some stage will have to get on our program a capital program report or briefing or update. So for all members. Having said that, I thank you very much, and I think this was a very good meeting. Personally, my first interaction with yourself, I appreciate that you have taken the invitation seriously and able to honor the invitation. And I think this is going to be a pattern from now on, that time to time we'll have to meet, we'll have to prepare a briefing and make presentation not only through the DG but entities, CEOs and CFOs making presentations themselves directly to the committee. And secondly, Minister, I think given the situation that we find ourselves in, maybe it will be advisable in future that on the management of the COEs, when they come to the portfolio committee, they bring along their procurement senior managers so that they come here, they listen to the questions, and they respond directly, because most of the challenges that we are faced with, among others, are around the procurement and supply chain issues. And with those words, I thank you for our guests that are in attendance and everyone else that has been attending this portfolio committee. And the meeting after this, after we adjourn, we go for a break, and then the committee will come back at, as a reminder, as an announcement, at 1400 hours, the venue is still the same for the inquiry. And from myself, as the chair of the portfolio committee, thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Take a picture of my